Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm a feminist, but I bought an electric foot file off the internet. But I opted for the man's option, even though the woman's one and the men's one were the same price, because I presumed it would be stronger. That's fucked up, isn't it?
An electric foot file. You're probably right, though. File. You're probably right.
They have gnarlier... I presume they have gnarlier feet. Yeah?
I mean, as a trend...
Is that like... It's never that unfeminist of me?
No, it's never an absolute, but as a trend, men probably do... have slightly gnarlier feet.
But then I'm like, you know, if I want to sell foot pictures, do I have to keep them a bit gnarly? Like, you know?
No, I don't think... I think for the opposite. For foot pictures, don't you want smooth little babies?
I don't know, but like if you're into feet, you must be like, into feet, you know? So that must be like... I was going to say warts and all, but that would be verrucas.
I would assume for foot pictures, saleable foot pictures,
yeah.
And this is an I'm a feminist but from me, what a prejudice on my part. I'd go and have a pedicure, I'd smooth them down, I'd go to town on them.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, we just have to poll...
The cost of living crisis is coming up. I'm looking for a side hustle. And yeah, so I've invested in a foot file, therefore investing in my future.
You will be right about a men's one probably being stronger because men get better products all the time for that kind of thing. They get the Black & Decker foot file. We will get the kind of the sort of, you know, Venus one, you know, advertised by Bananarama.
Yes, where like an angel will just breathe on your heel. I want this foot file to like literally take off my toes. I don't want anything.
I want
cute little feminine stubs, just, you know.
I love that you've bought a foot file for the foot files.
What do you mean?
Well, you've bought a foot file with an F for the foot files with a PH.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Oh, that's very good.
It's a much better pun than it is a funny pun, because the audience really voted there with their feet, and ironically...
I want feet like a Bratz doll, do you know what I mean? I just want to click into my shoe. If you've ever owned a Bratz doll, you know they don't have feet.
Yeah.
It's a very niche joke.
I get it.
For people that were like 28 or something like that.
People that are precisely 28. Yeah. I'm a feminist, but when Suella Braverman, our Home Secretary, this week said that being homeless was a lifestyle choice, I thought, well, in that case, calling her a cunt is a lifestyle choice. I think it would have been better off the other way around. And at the last minute, I flipped it. So I'm going to try it again. I thought, well, my lifestyle choice is calling her a cunt.
Beautiful.
That's funnier. That's funny. I should have gone with my first instinct. That was funnier.
But she is a cunt. Like,
I mean, I don't like calling a woman a cunt, but that is so cunty.
And she's like, what's her lifestyle choice? Like, genuinely.
Oh, it turns out living with her parents while claiming all sorts of money from the government to not live with their parents.
Really? Is that a real thing?
That's a real thing. It just came out. Yeah.
God, when you said living with her parents, I was like, that's humanised her. I'm like, I've done that.
No. She claimed something like 25 grand for living expenses or something where she was just living with her parents.
Oh, my Christ.
Yeah, that's a lifestyle choice. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's a fucking lifestyle choice. That's a lifestyle grift.
That is an absolute grift. And it's hilarious because these like Tories go like, don't give money to homeless people. They might spend it on drink or drugs. And it's like, don't give you grants because you're liars. Anyway. Yeah.
There's so much coke going on in the House of Commons. It's not funny.
Coke?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, there's like, and their bar, they get all this subsidised, really fancy wine and stuff. Don't give booze or, you know, to homeless people. Don't give money to homeless people. I'll spend it on booze. What are you spending it on? I've been into the House of Commons. I've seen the bars. I mean, come on. Anyway, you do one.
Oh, sorry, yes. I'm a feminist, but I've started growing hair on my big toes lately. I don't know how it's happened. There's a bit of a theme to these I'm a feminist, but... I've started growing like hairs on the bottom of my big toes, and they act well, like, do you know, below the nail. So I'm looking at my foot, right, and my big toes, they look like, do you know what they look like? They look like men on BBC4 who talk about minimalism. Do you know what I mean? Like, they got little soul patches, and it's weird because I respect them more. Do you know what I mean? When they didn't have little beards, I didn't pay attention to them. But now they've grown hair. It's
You've just taken them more seriously.
Yeah, like men in a way. Do you know what I mean? It's really fucked up.
No, I get it. No, you've been socially conditioned to think that they're wiser now.
They're wiser. They are wiser. And the thing is, like, I'm thinking of like going to a beautician and like asking them. I don't know how you get your feet waxed. You go, can I get a landing strip on this? Like, what do you say?
I think they just take the whole toe hair off.
Get the hobbit.
Can you?
Is that what they call it? It should be. Wouldn't it be great? Yeah. Well, I suppose it's the opposite of a hobbit, isn't it? It's like, what's the hobbit? Doesn't matter. Do you know what? I've never seen Lord of the Rings. I've no context for anything. I know Gollum. He likes a ring. And there's a guy called Frodo and Bilbo. And that's about it. That's all I know about Lord of the Rings. That's a total, I don't know, like, that piece of media is just totally, no, is it
you
good?
You can't do everything. I mean, it got to a point with that where I was like, there were so many endings. I just leant over and whispered to Tom, I think we live here now. I think we just live in this film now. That's where we live. I'm a feminist, but tonight, when I asked Alison Spittle backstage what her stand-up was about, and she said it was about a man objectifying her in a lift, I went, oh my God, fantastic, because that fits the theme. And I was genuinely thrilled for a split second that a man had objectified her in a lift. And I was elated. And then I went, oh my God, I'm so sorry that happened. But also, yay.
I'm a feminist, but I bought a pink hoodie from the Rita Ora collection in Primark. Pennies. I know. Where's my Irish huns? Where are you? I know. It's you're up the back. Of course you are, you mad cunt. Sorry. That is the weird thing. Do you know, like, do you know what I call Dylan Moore? And I call him Dylan Moran, and it feels weird in my mouth. Do you know that? Because
Don't do that.
I know, but I live here now. It's truly fucked. But like, what I do is like, so I'm from Ireland and I moved to England about, I'd say about 4 years ago now at this mm-hmm. stage. And like the weird thing is like once I saw an old man in a Westmead GAA jersey, this will make sense to no one from Ireland. And I literally followed him. I followed him home. And I kept saying stuff like Joe Dolan, like to make him turn around. And that's the name. Joe Dolan is this amazing singer. I'll give it to you after.
Yeah, that wasn't what I was gasping at. You were stalking a man and whispering things you thought might make him turn around.
I know.
It wasn't the content. It wasn't, oh, you're Val Dunican. Oh, I know him. That was absolutely irrelevant to me.
Do you know
it
what's weird? Because I didn't want to be creepy. I didn't want to just go up to him.
Well, then...
Do you know what I mean? I wanted to be cool about it.
If somebody just came up to me and went, oh, Deborah, I know you're... I'm also from that part of Australia. I'd be like, well, that's lovely. But if they just skulked around a couple of feet behind me and went, Rob Harris, that would be...
I mean, that would be weird.
That would be really disturbing.
Yes, it would.
And I would be... I'd be quickening my step.
Can I just say, Joe Dolan is nothing like Rob Harris.
Sorry, I don't know why he was the first Australian that came to me, and I apologise for that unnecessary reference.
But I bought the hoodie, and what I found weird about it, I'll show it to you, I got it on here, right? I bought it, and I think it makes me, I'll show it to you, wait. I mean, this is no good for a podcast, but I'll describe it.
Alison, you look like a Muppet. An adorable Muppet.
I think I look like a Willy. Yeah. On a children's TV show. Do you know what I mean? Hello, I'm Mr. Willy. And the weird thing is, this is... Like, I can see in the mirror. I know what I look like. But I kind of feel a bit more confident. I'm like, yeah.
Live from Soho Theatre in London, The Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis White, guest co-host Alison Spindle, and our very special guest, Lydia Pettit, talking about the object and the subject. Hello, 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 hello. Oh, my God. Thank you so much for coming out, because last Thursday night, this show was sold out. Don't mean to brag. And I got COVID, don't mean to brag. And so I'm in it now, it's novel. And they had to cancel it. And there was no one here at all last Thursday. So they said to all the last Thursday people, do you want to come next Thursday? And lots of them went, no, we've got the plans. We're busy Londoners. I've got a date next Thursday. I don't want them knowing I'm a feminist or whatever they said. They had other stuff on. So just give us a cheer if you transferred from a last week show. Give us a cheer. Thank you so much for coming back despite the inconvenience to your social life. Just give us a cheer if you had to cancel something else to be here tonight. Oh, what did you cancel?
Being on the bed.
Being on the bed? Being on the bed. Is that what the young people are calling it?
I thought I just invented it. I got nervous seeing you.
You just invented it. But being on the bed, is it an innuendo or do you just literally mean lying down? We've all cancelled that. We've all cancelled that. We all thought about it. We all looked outside. It was raining. It was a bit cold. We all thought about it. Listen, there are some empty seats here at the front where people did it. People went, fuck it, I'm home now. Oh, I don't think I can... I can't be asked to get out again. Oh, it looks like outside out there. Just give us a cheer. Who else cancelled something to come tonight? Someone else cheer? Yes? Oh, you're pointing those people out like it's a police state. You would be very good in a police state. They're upstairs. What's yours? What did you cancel to be here?
Your boyfriend's gig.
Your husband's gig. I'm sorry. Oh, so you forgot. Not only did you not go to his gig, you forgot that you'd married him. Is that a recent husband?
Yes.
Oh, so he was recently your boyfriend. So you're still not used to saying husband. Yeah, it's a horrible word, isn't it? Wife's awful too, isn't it? Like boyfriend, girlfriend, you sound so young and sexy. Husband, wife, it sounds so serious. It sounds just like the gas bill and nothing fucking else. Which, you know, let's not make assumptions about everyone's marriage. But most of them are like that. So what's your husband's gig?
He plays in a big band.
He plays in a big band.
Trumpet. But where, by big band, I thought you might mean like U2 or something like that. But no, you mean big band like a jazz band. And you were going to see the Guild of Famous last week and your husband's jazz band this week. And instead you said, fuck you. I've seen him a lot. I've seen him a lot. Well, listen, that's feminism, because she put feminism over a man. Even a man she just very recently married. Well done. So give us a cheer if you weren't going to come last week. You just saw it was on this week and you went, oh, come to this week. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming out. Thank you for coming out. If you just walked up, if anyone just came up at the last minute and went, oh, yeah, I'll go and see that. Just give us a cheer. I don't want to assume your gender. Was that a man?
Yes.
It was a man. You just saw it was on and thought, this looks like me?
We saw a show before and we were kind of lacking
vibes,
so we decided
to
stick around.
You saw a show before? Whose show did you see before? This gives me no confidence that if you're asked later what show this was, that you'll be able to spread the good news. It was another show. Was it in this room or the basement?
No, the basement.
You were in the basement. Was it Chloe Petz or someone?
Phil Ellis.
Oh, I see. You saw Phil Ellis in the basement. Well done. And then you liked the vibe so much, you thought, we'll see if it's as good as Phil Ellis upstairs. Well, you would think if it was...
It's a different vibe, I suspect.
But... It's a very different vibe. So I don't know. What's your name?
Dominic.
Did Phil ask you your name? Well, already we're better then. We've made you feel personally welcome, Dominic. Phil Ellis didn't do that, did he? No, he just went on with his own jokes as if you didn't exist, Dominic. We care about you, Dominic. We're interested in you, Dominic. What do you do for a living?
It's weirdly technical.
That's when people are drug dealers, that's what they say. They're like, oh, it's weirdly technical.
I'll just say analyst.
You'll just say analyst. Spy. Spy. Well, Dominic, thank you so much for coming. Was it the title that drew you in, The Guilt of Feminist?
My wife's a fan, so...
Your wife's a fan of the show?
Yeah.
Oh, and you didn't realise we were on the same building as Phil Ellis, and you were like, oh, can we go upstairs to this? And Dominic went, if we have to. And you went, don't worry, we won't sit at the front. She won't talk to you. Is that what happened? Was that the conversation? It's kind of, yeah, absolutely. Well, well done. I'm sorry, I'm sure you do not identify as Dominic's girlfriend / wife. Wife. Another wife, isn't it? It's another married thing. You said wife. I'm sorry. What's your name?
Raquel.
Thank you so much, Raquel, and thank you for being a fan. Just give us a cheer if anyone else listens to The Guilty Feminist.
Woo!
Give us a cheer if you don't know what you're at.
Woo!
Okay. You don't know what you're at? You kind of know what you're at. What do you think you're at? A feminism podcast. It's not bad, is it, for someone who doesn't know what he's at? Have you heard it?
In the background.
In the background. Is this your partner? This is your wife? Because a lot of married people in, given it's Soho on a weeknight. So conventional, everybody. It's usually, every time I do a show here normally, it's just full of the pan pollies. This is not, and I'm not assuming, because you're married, you're not a pan polly. You may well be. I don't want... Are you asking her what a pan polly is? Yeah. What's your name?
Tom.
Excellent. My husband's name, funnily enough. Good name, yes. You're looking slightly scared at me now. I'm not going to swap you out, don't worry. Tom, you've heard it in the background. Is that because your wife... Sorry, what's your name? What's your name? Antonietta. Is that because Antonietta listens to it? She's a fan, so she listens to it, interestingly, without headphones... while you're in the house. Do you know why she does that, Tom? I do. Do we all know? It's so you learn something by osmosis, Tom. And strangely, you've been magnetically drawn here tonight. It's not a cult. Lock the doors. It's not a cult, Tom, and that's what you need to keep in mind. You are sitting in the front row and making direct eye contact with me, so it's your own fault. Dominic, I just found him. I mean, he did shout out, to be fair. But you and I, Tom... we're connected for this evening. Are you enjoying it so far?
I am.
Yep, you are. I'm so sorry about the height of the stage. It's for a play. Normally this is raked seating, so we're down here and then you go up here. I hate it when the stage is higher than the front row, because I know that the view that you have is the same view I have if I accidentally open my camera phone the wrong way. Oh my God! It's not my most flattering angle. I know what you're seeing, and it's about 12 chins. They're not real, it's lighting. You, at the top, at the back, thank you, you're waving at me there. Excellent. What's your name?
Jed.
Jed. Yes. Lots of very vocal men tonight. Again, I don't want to assume your gender. Are you, in fact, a man?
I am a man.
You are a man. A lot of very vocal men. Jed just waved at me, gave me a little saucy wave. Just went... like that. What's that?
I'm a flirt.
You're a flirt. I can see that, Jed. That was implied with the saucy wave in the dark while I'm on stage. So if you're seeing me from Jed's angle, I am about 25% less attractive than you think I am, because you're from the attractive selfie angle held above my head. If you're seeing me from Tom's angle, I'm 45% more attractive than you think I am. So if you and Jed got together, I'd be about right. All right. I thought there was a lack of pan poly, but it's surfaced now, hasn't it? Okay, all right. Just give us a cheer if you think you've got a feminist job.
Woo!
Yes, what's your job?
I'm a casting director.
A casting director? Now, why is that a feminist job?
Because I look for disabled actors.
Oh, you look for disabled actors. So you're specifically a casting director for disabled actors? Oh, I see. You do stealth feminism in an unfeminist job. That's an interesting one. Or not necessarily a feminist neutral job. You do stealth feminism. Can be a feminist job, depending on the type of thing that you're casting. And then you make it more feminist. Amazing work. Is a casting agency we should know, or should we know about you in any way?
I probably shouldn't go into it.
Like, okay, so she's casting for MI5. Anyone else think they've got a feminist job? I know more people than that have got a feminist job. I understand who my audience is. My audience are three types of people. One, people who work directly in the most feminist way possible in literacy or with refugees or something like that. Second group, work in a more sort of like holistic, well, NHS, climate change. And the third group are people doing a PhD about Virginia Woolf. Give us a cheer if you're doing a PhD about Virginia Woolf. Give us a cheer if you're doing a PhD. Yes, it's always. Always have people who give a cheer if you've already got a PhD. Yep. There's always, like, it's not a massive room, and yet there's at least five doctors or doctors-to-be in the room. What's your doctorate on? Whoever cheered over here?
Genetics.
Excellent. Not eugenics, just to be clear. What are you trying to prove or fix?
Plant diseases, how they evolve.
You're trying to stop diseases?
Yeah.
What kind of diseases?
Plant
diseases. Who plans diseases?
Plants.
Oh, plant diseases. Oh, I thought you said plant diseases, and I was like, oh my God, this is a conspiracy that I've not heard about. Oh, so plant diseases.
Yes.
So diseases in plants.
Yes.
Do plants get diseases?
Yes.
Do they?
Of course.
Like, so like, and then if you, through genetics, you're fixing, like, trees, what, who get,
yeah.
What, like... ill. Is that, and that's good because of the environment?
And because we eat.
And because plants. We eat plants. So if we're eating carrots that are not well.
You fix them.
You fix them. I don't. Yes. Excellent. Okay. Anyone else got a good PhD? Anyone else got a PhD? Anyone else got a dissertation? Yes. What's yours? Ghosts in Irish theatre. Interestingly, the casting director. It's come full circle. I think that's a good place to stop. I love dissertation titles. Ghosts in Irish theatre. But I bet the real title is much longer than that. Is it?
Yeah.
It's Spectres in the Playboy of the Western World. Second act. Metaphorical only. I'm aware some people have come because they think it's a play, because we're in the theatre. Just give us a cheer if you thought it was a play. Just one person. In Soho Theatre, we tend to do more fun stuff because of the nature of the venue, and we do tend to do more serious stuff elsewhere. I don't want you to think that I'm ignoring what's going on in the world, because tonight we're talking about art and objectivity and subjectivity and things like that. I'm currently organising an episode about the situation in Gaza with Amnesty International, who are completely curating it because I'm not an expert. So we are dealing with those things. But tonight, what we're doing is we are giving space for some joy so that we ourselves as feminists can recuperate and restore and go out tomorrow and have another go at it. We do need to restore together, and we do need to restore in joyful spaces. I've learnt this by people who've been through a lot more than me in terms of activism. A friend of mine who was arrested in Turkey, and she keeps saying to me, what you're bringing is joy. Bring joy, because joy builds resilience amongst feminists. So are you on for some Thursday night joy and restoration? Then please welcome to the stage my incredible co-pilot of this evening. She is a guilty feminist favourite of mine and yours. It's the wonderful Alison Spittle. Oh my God, thank you so much for coming out, because last Thursday night, this show was sold out, don't mean to brag, and I got COVID, don't mean to brag, and so I'm in it now, it's novel, and they had to cancel it, and there was no one here at all last Thursday, so they said to all the last Thursday people, do you want to come next Thursday? And lots of them went, no, we've got the plans, we're busy Londoners, I've got a date next Thursday, I don't want them knowing I'm a feminist, or whatever they said. They had other stuff on. So just give us a cheer if you transferred from a last week show. Give us a cheer. Thank you so much for coming back, despite the inconvenience to your social life. Just give us a cheer if you had to cancel something else to be here tonight. Oh, what did you cancel?
Being on the bed.
Being on the bed. Is that what the young people are calling it? You just invented it. But being on the bed, is it an innuendo, or do you just literally mean lying down?
Lying down.
We've all cancelled that. Yeah. We've all cancelled that. We all thought about it. We all looked outside. It was raining. It was a bit cold. We all thought about it. Listen, there are some empty seats here at the front where people did it. People went, fuck it, I'm home now. Oh, I don't think I can... I can't be asked to get out again. Oh, it looks like outside out there. Just give us a cheer. Who else cancelled something to come tonight? Someone else cheer? Yes? Oh, you're pointing those people out like it's a police state. You would be very good in a police state. They're upstairs. What's yours? What did you cancel to be here?
Your boyfriend's gig?
Your husband's gig, I'm sorry. Oh, so you forgot... Not only did you not go to his gig, you forgot that you'd married him. Is that a recent husband?
Yes.
Oh, so he was recently your boyfriend, so you're still not used to saying husband? Yeah, it's a horrible word, isn't it? Yeah. Wife's awful too, isn't it? Like boyfriend, girlfriend, you sound so young and sexy. Husband, wife, it sounds so serious. It sounds just like the gas bill and nothing fucking else. Which, you know, let's not make assumptions about everyone's marriage. But most of them are like that. So what's your husband's gig?
He plays in a big band.
But where? Oh, by big band, I thought you might mean like U2 or something like that. But no, you mean big band like a jazz band. And you were going to see The Guilt of Feminist last week and your husband's jazz band this week, and instead you said, fuck you. I've seen him a lot. I've seen him a lot. Well, listen, that's feminism, because she put feminism over a man. Even a man she just very recently married. Well done. So give us a cheer if you weren't going to come last week, you just saw it was on this week and you went, oh, come to this week. Woo! Thank you so much, thank you for coming out. Thank you for coming out if you just walked up, if anyone just came up at the last minute and went, oh yeah, I'll go and see that, just give us a cheer. Woo! I don't want to assume your gender. Was that a man?
Yes.
It was a man. You just saw it was on and thought, this looks like me. You saw a show before. Whose show did you see before? This gives me no confidence that if you're asked later what show this was, that you'll be able to share, spread the good news. It was another show. Was it in this room or the basement?
No, the basement.
You were in the basement. Was it Chloe Petz or someone?
Phil Ellis.
Phil Ellis. Oh, I see. You saw Phil Ellis in the basement. Well done. And then you liked the vibe so much, you thought, we'll see if it's as good as Phil Ellis upstairs. Well, you would think if it was...
It's a different vibe, I suspect.
Oh, it's a very different vibe. So I don't know. What's your name?
Dominic.
Did Phil ask you your name?
No.
Well, already we're better then. We've made you feel personally welcome, Dominic. Phil Ellis didn't do that, did he? No, he just went on with his own jokes as if you didn't exist, Dominic. We care about you, Dominic. We're interested in you, Dominic. What do you do for a living?
It's weirdly technical.
That's when people are drug dealers, that's what they say. They're like, oh, it's weirdly technical.
I'll just say analyst.
You'll just say analyst. Please welcome to the stage the incredible Alison Spittle!
Also, like, I'm not Joan, like, I'm not Rita Ora's, what did I call it when you try and do publicity, PR? I'm not Rita Ora's PR, but these earrings are the Rita Ora collection as well. If I'm being honest with you, I went in for a bit of a hate look. I was like, what? Who would buy shit from Rita Ora? And then I'm like, me. Very much so. I bought loads from it. So I'm going to talk to you today about, like, as a woman, I get bought quite a lot of bath bombs for Christmas, right? With no research into whether I've access to a bath or not. Like, no one cares. No one cares. I live in London with 7 other people, right? I don't even have access to a verrucola swash. Like, there's just no... I'm not luxuriating in anything, right? And I've got 24 bath bombs in my drawer now because I haven't thrown them away, you know. I've developed quite an artillery of bath bombs at this stage. And I went to this hotel. Do you know what? I'll name the hotel. It's Sasha's, right, in Manchester, which, according to TripAdvisor, is the worst hotel in Manchester. Like, they voted the worst hotel. Do you know what I love doing? It's like a bit of an adrenaline rush for me. What I like to do is I like to look at the reviews of a hotel after I've booked it. You know, I can't change what I've done. And I'm going to go there, but I might as well be prepared. And, like, there was such bad reviews for this hotel, right? And I went to it, and I was expecting the worst. Beautiful. Lovely chandelier. Went into the lift, and I'm in the lift, and it's about, like, 11 o'clock at night, and there's this man in the lift, and he's got, a takeaway, right? He's going to have a good night. I've got a rucksack full of bath bombs. In the hope that this place has a bath, right? I'm going to have a good night as well, right? And we say nothing to each other, but then he says to me, you've quite big feet for a woman. And I said, thank you. And he said, yeah. Like, you've quite big feet. You're shaped like a duck. You're quite duck-shaped, right? And I was like, thank you. And then he goes, but don't worry. I like that kind of thing. Quack, quack, baby. And it was at that stage I told him I had a boyfriend, right? As if that was the only thing stopping me from fucking him there and then. I said, no, I belong to another. I belong to another. And he propositioned me in the lift. And, like, the thing what I found funny about it was, and, like, this is not in the stand-up, but this is, like, a thing that I thought of after. Because he had a bag with a takeaway. I thought, that's a real dedication to fucking that a man has that I don't have in me. Like, if I had a bag of a Chinese takeaway, I don't care if Jake Gyllenhaal is in the lift, right? I'm going to enjoy that takeaway. I'll fuck him after. I'll find you. But, like, I'm not letting that takeaway go cold. Like, there's no microwaves in it. I went into my hotel room and I put on the bath and I'm there. I bring a flask of soup with me everywhere now, because of the cost of living crisis. And genuinely, I walk around with a flask of soup around my neck like a St. Bernard dog with brandy, just in case of an emergency. And this hotel, it did have a bath. It was a lovely hotel. Like, I've named it. I fully recommend the hotel. It's cheap. It's nice. The staff were lovely. I left my passport there and they got it back for me. The breakfast is shit, though. I'm not going to lie for them. You know what I mean? I don't want you to go, oh, she said it was lovely. It's fine for what it is. Skip the breakfast, right? But I had this flask of soup and I had a gig. It was an hour away. So I had to make a choice between having a bath or eating my dinner. And then I thought, fuck it, Alison, you're an independent woman. You don't have to make a choice at all. You can girl boss this. So I decided, right, to run the bath, and I opened up my soup and I was ready for a luxurious time. I threw all of the 24 bath bombs into my bath. Like a bath bomb Oppenheimer, you know? I should have been asking myself, should I, rather than could I, right? And I haven't seen Oppenheimer, but I presume that's what it was about. Go. And it was the angriest barocca I've ever seen. This bath was intense. Do you know? It was like a witch's cauldron. I was so scared. So I threw my body on top of this angry barocca. And I'm there with my open flask of soup, and I'm like, should I do this? Like, am I actually going to do this? And yes, I did. I ate the soup in the bath. And I'm, you know, sitting there in a brothy bath, drinking soup. It felt perverse, if I'm being frank with you. I felt like a Russian doll just made of soup, just consuming soup, sitting in my own soup, right? And, yeah. But, yeah. It's weird that, like, I was going to kink shame myself about soup. That's the bit, really. I don't know how to end, because I'm only giving you 5 minutes and there's loads of other bits and you don't need to hear that, but... more soup. Okay, fuck it. Do you know what? Because I got this whole show called Soup. It's going to be touring. Genuinely. I won't lie, that was a bit from that. What I'll do with you is the audience then. A person in front, do you mind asking me... No, sorry. What's your favourite soup? You... Yeah, you see, the problem is, you see, I got two lazy eyes. So six people look at me to go, me? I feel like a fishing trawler that's just trying to catch one goldfish. And I'm like, nah, I'm getting them all in. Sorry, what's your favourite soup?
Chicken and veg.
Chicken and veg, good choice. I'm going to make an assessment about your life based on that soup. So you're a chicken and veg girly. What will I say about you? Have you ever watched an episode of Fraser in the morning on Channel 4 and wished that you could stay at home? No, you haven't, have you? That's fine. You see, the system doesn't work all the time. Oh, wait there. Have you ever watched an episode of Friends? Fabulous. We're done. That's the assessment there.
Alison Spittle, everybody!
Thank you.
That was brilliant. I am now going to do... I want to play that game with you later about what soup I have.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not much of a soup person, actually.
I'm like a funeral soup. That's my favourite soup. Yeah. The Irish people know at the back what that is.
Funeral soup?
It's basically... It's a similar to soup you get at a wedding. So it's that kind of like vegetable bouillon, thick kind of stuff that you get mass catering. But with a funeral one... there's tears involved, so it makes it that bit saltier. It's beautiful. Do you ever make your own condiments?
No, I don't.
That's the most disgusting thing I've ever said. Sorry.
It isn't, Alison, and that's what's interesting about that. You've said so many more disgusting things to me than that tonight. You opened with something about Santa, no, dead Santa.
I did, didn't I? Yeah.
All right.
We're probably not going to keep that in, are we? You'd have to give so many trigger warnings. People will go crazy over that.
I mean, I look forward to it.
trigger warning, discussions of Santa.
Okay, so I'm going to do a little bit about the subject and the object before we bring our guest on.
Yes.
I don't think I'm going to stand up because it's not really stand up.
Yeah.
So
it's sit down.
It's sit down. So I'm going to do it sit down because I don't want people to... If I stand up, there'll be an expectation of laughter, and that's not really what it is. Now, listen, no, I'm not saying you're not going to laugh. I think you probably will. But if I stand up, there'll be a sort of raised expectation, which I don't want.
Deborah, this is a bit like if you're about to fuck someone and they're like, I'm going to give a bit of oral at first and then maybe hand jobbing and we'll finish off with this. And you're like, why did you tell me about it? Well, I suppose maybe you should.
I'm going to start off by making my own condiment.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Could you say, please welcome to the mic, Deborah Frances White, just for the podcast.
Please welcome to the mic, Deborah Frances White, everybody.
Bert came to the shops with Ernie and me. It's not Ernie and I. You don't sound clever or more grammatically correct if you say with Ernie and I. And I know they're judging me when I say Ernie and me, thinking it's I. It's not I. It's not I. Why is it not I? It's not Ernie and I because if it's at the end of the sentence, you're the object. It's probably me because you're the object. The subject in the sentence there is Bert, okay? Because the subject in a sentence is the thing that performs the action of a verb, whereas the object is the person, thing, or place that is impacted by or involved in the action. You can see why I'm sitting down for this. In other words, the subject does and the object receives. A sentence needs a subject, but not all sentences require an object. Alison slaps, full sentence. So it's Alison doing something. There's no need to say what or who she slaps. Headlines and newspaper reporting often fuck with this. This is why it's important for feminists to know. This is not just me being a grammar snob. Really, really, it isn't. This is a feminist issue because headlines and newspaper reporting often fuck with this. For example, the woman was assaulted while working for Harvey Weinstein. Who is the subject of that sentence? The woman. So the woman activates the verb. The woman was assaulted. As if the woman did it. As if just her presence there pushed the action of assault while working for Harvey Weinstein. That's a piece of reporting. As if Harvey Weinstein was just in the building while she was assaulted. Here's another one. This is from The Guardian. Underage girl forced to have sex with Prince Andrew, US court document claims. Underage girl pushing the action, forced to have sex with Prince Andrew. He is the object of the sentence because as soon as he's the subject of the sentence, it implies that he's the act of one. There are times when a woman has been made an object, but the press decide she's pushing the action. So she's been objectified and treated as an object, but the press decide she's the subject, she's pushing the action. This is one. The Duke of Kent, the president of the All England Club, presents Serena Williams with the winner's trophy after another historic win at the Grand Slam. This is a good one because the man's the subject. He's driving that action there. What action is he driving? Presenting a trophy to Serena Williams, because we all know the presenting of the trophy is the difficult part of winning Wimbledon. That's the real, and being Mr. President of the All England Club. This is a similar headline, but about a man. Federer wins record-breaking eighth Wimbledon. See there, Federer is the subject. He wins record-breaking eighth Wimbledon. Who gave him the trophy? It doesn't say. No one gives a fuck. Why? It was Federer. He's the subject. There's another headline, and it's just Federer wins. That's like Alison slaps. It's implied. It's implied who or what she slaps. It's implied who or what he's won. Doesn't matter. He's just a winner. This isn't always the case. I suppose, to be fair to the news, I spotted this other tennis headline where the woman was the subject and the man was the object. Okay. This is a different one. So woman's going to be the subject here. Just being fair and balanced to the news. Alexander Zverevs. Is that right? Am I saying that right, tennis fans? Zverevs? Alexander Zverevs' ex-girlfriend goes public with details of alleged assault. So there you go. There's the woman pushing the action. She is going public. She doesn't have a name. There's no need for a name. Why would she need a name? She's identified specifically by being a famous tennis player's ex-girlfriend. And what is she doing? Pushing that check goes public with details of alleged assault. Who has assaulted her? It's just implied. The tennis player. But we're so far away from his name now that we don't really associate him with being the assaulter. But here's one where the tennis player is the subject. Tennis star Nick Kyrgios pled guilty to assaulting ex-girlfriend during an argument in 2021, but a judge in Canberra, Australia, dismissed the charge, citing, among other things, the publicity the trial garnered. So there's one where he is active, but the end of the sentence is he got away with it. And that's when, generally, he's allowed to be active. When are you the subject of your own sentence? And this is what I'm going to now put to you. This is why it's important to know who's the subject and who's the object. And so that you don't go around saying things like, myself, I did that. You have to know, are you the object or are you the subject? For example, you could ask someone on a date by saying, I was wondering if you wanted to go to a show with me. Or you could say, I'm going to a show and I'd love you to come with me. And try not to end it with, only if you're around, no worries if not. This could be an example of a work email. Just wondering if you'd like to look over some of the things the team have done this week. Thanks for supporting us through this fraught time. You're nowhere in that sentence. And the person, the boss, is now the subject. But you could turn that around and say, the team and I have achieved the impossible, despite the odds, and we want to invite you in to gasp in amazement and congratulate us with pizza, beer, and sizable bonuses. We appreciate your ongoing support of our brilliance. Or finally, dear Prime Minister, I will not be voting for your party, not now or ever, due to your actions, words, values, and principles. Love me, always the subject. But not your subject. Thank you very much.
Yay. That was great.
Thank you.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is Deborah with a few quick announcements. We are back at King's Place in London with new live shows. On the 19th of February, we have the host of Academic Imperfectionist podcast, Rebecca Roche, and the hilarious Eleanor Conway with the amazing Sakisa as my co-host. For more information and to book tickets, go to guiltyfeminist.com and click on live shows. I will also be coming to Australia and New Zealand in May. Those tickets will be available very soon, so keep an eye on the website. If you want an ad-free version of the show, you can get that from Patreon, Acast Plus, or Apple. And if you want to help us out, leave your 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts, or just tell someone you know that they should listen to The Guilty Feminist with your face, or in a WhatsApp group. Who knows? Speaking of which, back to the podcast. All right, it's time for our incredible guest.
Let's do it.
Our guest today is an artist who makes paintings and textile works that explore body image, self-identity, and trauma. Yay. Using herself as a model, she addresses the complex impact of the objectification of women within society and how this is bound up with an idealized notion of the feminine. Please welcome to the stage, Lydia Petit. Lydia, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. I really needed that grammar lesson.
I'm so sorry because it was a bit school mommy.
No, but it's important because I never think about it.
It's really important. Whenever I hear people saying coming with so-and-so and I think you don't understand how this is working, and that doesn't matter in itself. I don't give a fuck about people using quote-unquote grammar, but I do care about women and people of marginalized genders being able to drive a sentence and also being able to identify where we're being told a story through the use of grammar that marginalizes or empowers.
Yeah, absolutely. And also like passive language, like you were just talking about work emails. I can't tell you the number of times I've been like, hi, I just wanted to check in about this thing that you said you would get back to me 3 weeks ago on. And
just a nudge.
Just a, you know, but no worries. I say no worries so much.
I know, me too. And whenever I say it, I think worries.
Yeah.
Worries. No worries either way. Worries both ways and a third way.
Yeah. Fully worried. Yeah. Entirely worried.
Yeah, absolutely. Only worried. Now, listen, your art is absolutely incredible. And it really, the reason we came up with this theme tonight was because we were looking at your art and looking at the way that you take the usual objectification of women that has been, you know, historically and patriarchally foist upon us and has, of course, developed our psyche. And you do something very interesting with it. We'd love to show some slides of your art to begin. Tom, are we ready to do that? Okay, great.
Yes, please. Thank
Tom
you.
Tom Sinsky, everybody.
Okay. I'm not sharing myself.
So this is the first artwork.
Yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about this? Should you just describe it for the listeners at home?
Yes, it's a self-portrait, a very large painting of my hand gripping sort of the classic keys and the knuckles that I think most women have been educated to do when you're walking alone at night. I made this painting because I'm still so frustrated at, you know, because I remembered I learned this in a seminar at my all-girls Episcopal school when I was 12. And it was basically like a how to not get raped seminar. And it was sort of like, don't wear a ponytail, you know, walk with confidence in garages and like, don't look like a target and do this thing with keys because it'll save you or something. And I think even at that time, it perturbed me, even though I didn't really know why. It's like, why? Because like I was at a girls' school. There's a boys' school up the hill, and they did not have a symmetrical, a symmetrical sort of seminar of like, how about you don't assault people? You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. it's the frustration that the onus of our own protections on us. But also like in my experiences, it's not like the shadowy figure on the street that comes for you. It's the people who you love and who are near you that, you know.
It's the friend.
It's the friend. Oh, God, it is the friend.
Yeah.
And you can't constantly have a homemade key knuckle duster when you're on a date or sitting with watching a movie and someone leaves and you're left with somebody there. You can't constantly have your keys between your fingers. Or maybe you can. Maybe we should design a set of knuckle duster key rings that have that all the time.
Or we just go back to chaperones, you know? Like, you know, male chaperones, everyone has to have one, you know, if it's our responsibility.
Yeah, it's interesting because I used to do jokes about, like, walking around like an artisanal Wolverine just, you know, and you always have to pick what key goes where. And, like, you know, you pick the sharpest key for the index finger, you know, because that's where you think you're going to do the damage. And then you're just left with like a fob key at the end and you don't know where to put that. And it just hangs there all useless. And you're like, oh, maybe my assailant might have a pacemaker. And pop it up to his chest there. You shouldn't be doing crimes in your condition. How I imagine my voice will be when I beat up. My never goes down that way, but you know, I have my Batman voice ready.
I'm going to look at another slide now. Can you talk about this one?
Yeah, so my work is all self-portraiture, and a lot of it has to do with reconciling with the parts of you that are kind of split up after you go through trauma. Like for me, I just did a show that was all about It was called In Your Anger, I See Fear. And it's about, you know, depicting myself as like fear, anger, and then this sort of like central figure of the conscience and reconciliation. Mm. And in this piece, it's, you know, I just wanted to do a piece of me sort of like embracing this part of myself that I'm actually quite frightened by. Mm. You'll see in some of my other paintings, I depict myself as like literally a murderer. Because horror is a huge part of my work. And, you know, I think when you are taught to not express anger, often you push it down and it either comes out at yourself or can kind of become quite dangerous and violent and scary.
So is this you hugging you?
Yeah.
And hugging the side, the piece, the part inside of you that you're a bit scared of.
Yeah.
Who's in a black coat. Can you say what the name of this is? Because our listeners might want to look it up.
Yeah. The painting's called I Can Be Quite Hard on Myself. Mm. Because I think that there's a cycle that happens where you become angry at the parts of yourself that are like not attractive emotionally, mm-hmm. like physically and emotionally, like when you're not meek or amenable or rage. Like rage is something that I feel like I was never allowed to possess growing up, but it's an important feeling, anger, because it tells you when someone's like crossed your boundaries.
I find it hard to express anger. Like I do this thing where I just swallow. Like, mm-hmm. I just swallow air until I can't feel anything anymore. And then someone will be going, but it's okay to express yourself. And I'm like, that train is gone. Like, yeah. I can't do it now because I physically can't.
And it's like somewhere deeper that you can't immediately access anymore. It's gone out. It's run away. But yeah, I think it's scary to face that. And through my work, I've definitely kind of characterized myself as sort of like the classic, like Drew Barrymore in Scream, like helpless, like that person, as well as like a slasher that I'm scared of.
Mm. And there's both inside of you. Could you talk about this one?
Oh, yeah. God. So this painting.
What's it called?
This one's called Maw, which is, you know, Maw. And I basically went through quite a bit of trauma in my late teens, early 20s, and my body just kind of shut down when it came to sex. Like, I just stopped feeling attraction. And that was complicated in a world where you're like, everyone's meant to have a partner, meant to have, you know, be dating, all these things. And recently, though, the, you know, part of me that has been sort of like gone in the depths is starting to reemerge. And I find it incredibly frightening to like want something sexually. Like, I find it really, really alien and almost violent. Mm.
Yeah. And this painting is of your open mouth.
Yeah.
And there's saliva coming out of the mouth and inside the mouth.
And teeth and nasty. Yeah.
And is it angst or anguish or sexuality or all of those?
I find this painting is a great litmus test for whoever's looking at it, because, you know, my parents see someone in grave pain, you know, like men that I'm talking to are like, ooh, like spit, you know, and then like some people see, you know, anger, and it just depends. It's meant to be on the precipice of all these things, because I feel all these things at once when it comes to sex, you know.
I'm so repressed though that I'm like, when you said your parents reacted in that way and then men reacted, ooh, spit, I was like, yeah, I wouldn't like my parents go, ooh, spit. Do you know what I mean?
I don't want to talk about the pain.
Yeah, exactly.
I see anguish in that, I have to say. Yeah. What? Tell us about this one. What's it called?
So this one's called Mercy. And this is, there is two large paintings of my face. One is the victim, one's the villain. And this is the face of the villain. Mm. So this is sort of, this painting's 2 meters tall. So it's quite big and imposing. And it's sort of like, cinema is really, really important to my work. And so to me, I see this as like looking up at the face of the villain or the monster or the assailant, like before they kill you. And imagining myself in that place was incredibly scary, because again, I did not express anger for a long time. Mm. And I used to be quite proud of that, but actually I was just like, it was just like in me, like festering and becoming something nastier and nastier.
Well, when I'm angry, I'm afraid of losing control. I see when I used to think that if I didn't express anger, that meant I was in control of my emotions.
Yeah.
Rather than suppressing it. Like, what event? Like, when did you start actually having a healthy relationship with your own anger?
I mean, my painting has helped a lot, because, you know, 6 years ago, I've been painting since I was 15. I'm 32 now. But 6 years ago, I started the self-portraiture, and I didn't really know why. I just started to follow this like gut draw to painting myself. And then all of a sudden, I started just like realizing, you know, I've been in therapy forever, love therapy, but there's only, you know, sometimes there's a thing behaving in the subconscious that you can't access except through some kind of like active exploration. And I found that I was uncovering different layers of the trauma, and my body, and I felt like it was presenting things as I was ready to cope with them. And so the anger and this villain character started coming up a little like a year and a half ago, and I was really scared because all of a sudden I really wanted to paint myself as this like frightening figure, because I've never been the frightening one. I've always been like at the behest of someone who frightens me in my trauma, right? So I think that in a way, as like frightening as it is to make yourself look like scary and violent and like intimidating, it's also like super thrilling. And it's like a moment of fantasy where you get to be the one in these horror dynamics, in these like worlds you're building, you get to be the one that's like has the power and is meant to be feared.
Well, the subject, not the object.
Yeah.
Because if you watch a, like a film like Peeping Tom, which is kind of a classic of the genre of the serial killer, so one of the earliest ones, the object is always the woman who he's stalking, and the women in those films are there to be objectified, to be under the male gaze, and to ultimately be killed and often dismembered. And in this, although you're playing into that horror trope, you are the subject of the horror trope. And I think a lot of women have very dark sexual fantasies, and I think sometimes it's a way of controlling the worst thing that could ever happen to you by saying, in this fantasy, I choose this. And it's only a fantasy, and it doesn't mean at all that you would want something horrifying to happen to you in real life. But it is a way of going, I take control of it. I choose it. Yeah. And because we all live in fear of it. Let's look at this one.
This is the Drew Barrymore class. I mean, I didn't even mean it to be. I just happen to have the same hair of her as she did in Scream. But this piece was from a show I did all about Italian horror. So the sort of the similar era with
the Suspiria.
Yes, Suspiria, Dario Argento, the sort of like slashers, body count films.
What's this called?
This one's called It's Coming From Inside the House. Which,
and can you just describe briefly?
Oh, it's a painting of me crying on a vintage rotary telephone in the darkness, very, very Scream. And again, sometimes I also want to lean into victimhood because I find it comforting to, I always found it more comfortable to be seen as a victim rather than someone who is like active and like agency.
I love it when someone does me wrong. Do you know what I mean? Just for the chats I would have afterwards. And I didn't do anything. That would be my, you know what I mean? There's nothing better than like actual righteous rage where you're like,
yeah,
you know? And then other people can get angry on your behalf and I'm like, yeah.
And it's even
fizz on it, you know?
Yeah, and it's even like when you tell someone your story, whatever your story is, and they're like, oh my God, that's fucked up, and you're like, yeah, it is fucked up. But it is so fucked up. Tell me how bad it is.
Totally. My anecdotes are the most horrible anecdotes you'll ever hear in your life. Do you know? I remember once I went to a concert to watch Haim with another comedian, and before they started, I think the sentence ended with, yeah, and I think there's no such thing as natural justice, as my life has shown before. Mm. And then Haim were like, da, 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 da. And I was like, yeah, I love this song, you know? Because I think I do a lot of stand-up about trauma. I love your art and stuff. And I feel that, like, the thing, what not annoys me, but I've had people question me and go, like, once. So I've been robbed a lot of times, and twice I've walked in on people robbing me, and once the man had a knife, so that type. So it's kind of like Scream in that way.
That's terrible.
I know. But like, you know, shit happens. And like, I remember once the guy interviewed me and he goes, oh, he was trying to be a bit funny about, because I'm a comedian. He's like, is there a common denominator here? And I was like, yes, male violence. And that shut him up. So I didn't want to go, I'm a klutz. I just forget to lock the door.
I'm just such an obvious victim. Look at me. Right?
5 years ago, I would have been like, I'm such a little small bean. You know what I mean?
I'm just a baby.
I don't know. I'm just a baby. This world. Yeah, exactly.
Let's look at this one. Oh, this is really dramatic.
Yeah, so this one's called The Seduction, and it's sort of this villain character that I paint myself as looking in the reflection of themselves in the knife. And to me, this is literally about how if you sort of follow the spiral of rage and like anger and you don't cope with it properly, it's like incredibly thrilling to give into it. And like there is a seduction to give in to the part of you that wants to just like shout and scream and destroy relationships. And it like at the slightest sort of when you've been, especially when you've been through trauma, at the slightest transgression that someone may make, there's part of you that just wants to like throw them out of your life. Or, you know, and for me, I don't engage in physical violence, but I think obviously horror is an exaggeration of like very real emotions and experiences. And I find this idea of violence, emotional, physical, whatever, it's a lot easier to give into that than it is to like actually sort out the source of it.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Big time. And I think that like, that's why like violent stuff is so popular. I don't think like violent people like to watch violence. I don't think it's for that market. I think it's for people who want a bit of control. And I want to ask you like this, the last question I'll ask, and it's just I'm interested in this, because you're a similar age to me. And when I was a teenager, like for the first part of my teenage life, like when I was 13, there wasn't really such thing as a selfie, or as if I didn't understand what it was. You know, I knew it was something Paris Hilton did, but like it didn't apply to me. And then when I got older, I got a digital camera, and like my friends would do selfies. And I tried to do a selfie myself, but I kind of hated the way I looked, and I hated myself. And I kind of said, selfies are for people that are vacuous. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do a selfie because I'm not vacuous. But what it was that I didn't like the way I looked or myself, and I didn't want to keep a record of it. Kind of sad about that, because there's actually fuck all pictures of me when I was a teenager. Yeah. And I think looking back, I was rad. But like...
I bet you were.
Yes, I was. I liked Morrissey. I was quite problematic at the time. But what was your relationship like with selfies when you were a teenager and coming up to now?
I was actually... I had quite bad body dysmorphia. For people who can't see me, I'm a big lady, a bigger lady, as they say. When I was younger, I wasn't, but I saw myself as like disgusting, and I had like quite an unhealthy environment growing up when it came to physical, weight, fitness, food, all those things. Weirdly, I was like hyper obsessed with documenting myself but I would take so many pictures and delete so many pictures, and like it would only a handful would be like acceptable.
Yeah.
At the contortion, as you were speaking, the sort of like the angles, which are a big conversation in the 2000s, the sort of like the angles.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was walking around like Mega Mind. It was just a large forehead. It was taken so close to my forehead.
But yeah, I'd be like one of these, and I'd be like, oh, my eyes are so big. I'm so small. Look
yeah.
Because I wasn't, because I was, you know, I have huge feet, I'm taller, you know, I was always like a little bigger than my friends. But I think selfies, in a way, at first it started as sort of like a obsessive need to sort of like be seen. I was thinking about social media, MySpace, all that stuff, which is where I started, you know, MySpace. Yeah. But now... in terms of the artwork, because these are, you could say these are selfies too, but I have become so, we see ourselves through the lens of like other people. We don't look at when you look at yourself, you're not really looking at yourself. You're looking at it based on like the perceptions of other people.
Yeah.
You're analyzing the way that you look based on what would this person think? What is, you know, how am I supposed to look in these clothes? Like whatever. But I've depicted myself so many times at this point in like ways that are like not flattering conventionally. They're just like frank, you know, I have like the pubes and the stretch marks and the rolls. And
you often do pictures of just different body parts that seem disembodied.
Well, yeah. And I was saying this earlier, I think we're almost meant to dismember ourselves in the way that we look at our bodies, because we're sort of like, oh, well, my belly, I've like had this lifelong like struggle with, because it's like, it is unacceptable to have a big belly unless like you're pregnant, apparently. And so I've constantly fixate on my belly, or fixate on the fat under my arms, or fixate on my throat. I fixate on my thighs. I fixate on my fupa, you know, like all that stuff.
What's a fupa?
A fat upper pussy area.
Amazing.
Yeah. You've never heard fupa. Maybe that's an American thing.
I've never heard fupa.
I've seen it, but this is the fupa.
Has anyone else heard of that?
Oh my God.
Great word, fupa.
I feel like I've done my job.
In the front row knows it. Nobody else knows
it. Yeah, you're looking at all
these. I'm going to Google it.
This is me as like, you know, literally a scary person in the doorway coming to murder you. Yeah, I look at myself in segments of almost like a car that needs detailing. You know what I mean? And it's just like, in a way, I reflect that in my work because it's like, and again, I feel completely fine objectifying myself because I have the right to see myself and depict myself any way that I want. Mm. But I think that through the years of constant observation from an artistic lens rather than a lens of attraction, because again, I've never had a relationship. I didn't really date in my 20s because of my trauma. And so I started really only looking at myself in terms of like form, light, you know, what is there?
Yeah.
And so now I see myself in a way I'm really forming an actual relationship with my own body through my own sight, my own gaze, rather than constantly. And don't get me wrong, it's not like it's fixed. There's days when I look at myself, I'm like, I'm fucking disgusting. Like, I hate myself. And, you know, I think it's impossible to like constantly love yourself. I don't think that's like a healthy thing, but to look at yourself with neutrality and to value yourself beyond your appearance, I think, is really, really important. And I think the past 10 years, I've been quite aggressively trying to dismantle the structures that my life was built upon.
And the cool thing is, like, when I've done stand-up about myself, sometimes I've done fat jokes in the past because I felt it was acceptable. And then I would do stuff where the audience would feel uncomfortable with it. And I get that. But it's kind of cool that, like, you're allowed to just find out what's fucking right for you.
Yeah.
And to make art and to do that. And people can give their opinions and stuff. And that, you know, it's a conversation. But ultimately, and at the end of the day, it's you are the subject and the object. And you are, you know, you're presenting something. I think it's great. Like, thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you guys.
Yeah, there's some, I'm just going to show the quickly audience some of these.
Ah, look, we got the fupa.
Yes. Yeah, there's my fupa.
Beautiful.
Love it. Yeah, this is the companion to the red face. This is sort of like the witch being burned, you know. But fatness, I think also people are so frightened to even like...
They're afraid of the word.
They're scared of it because they don't want to even endorse you accepting reality of your own body.
Do you know who's most afraid of the word fat? Thin women around you. What? Oh. You can't call yourself that.
I get so much, no, you're beautiful.
I didn't say I wasn't.
Do you know what I mean? You have such a beautiful face. And I'm like... I know, but I didn't. My body is nice too, but back off. But no, I think it's also really liberating to be able to speak about yourself frankly, even if it makes people uncomfortable.
Mm. Well, that's what I think your art does because it really explores sides of the internal that sometimes I think feminism misses because we are concerned with constructing a better narrative than the one we've been given.
Yeah.
And therefore, sometimes we skip over our own humanity.
Yeah.
And I think you sit in the space which says inside every woman, deep down, there is a human being that is frightened and hungry and wants to fuck and doesn't want to fuck and wants to fight and is scared and is sometimes bad. And that's to me, when feminism, to me, the next stage of feminism is when women are allowed to be people.
And that's why I love horror, because there's so many depictions of women being like total nutters, you know, and like angry and vengeful and scared and just, you know, but also the heroine, the one who conquers the demon, the monster, whatever. There's all sorts of depictions. A lot of it comes from misogynistic perspectives, but many people, you know, queer people, indigenous people, like Black Americans especially, are like taking these tropes and flipping them to talk about their own pain. And I think it's really, really a wonderful resource.
horror and sci-fi are imaginative worlds yeah. where people who don't fit into the regular narrative, they can hijack them and then like, and twist them and, yeah. and create something wonderful. And that's what you're doing. We need to wrap up, but where can yeah. we see more of your work?
Oh my goodness. Well, not here for a while. Sorry.
Where can we follow you?
My Instagram is at Lydia Pettit, like you do a dog, you know, you pet it. Yeah, my dad says that. Yeah, just look there. I have a show opening tomorrow, actually, in Berlin, responding to a Baroque old master, a lady, Elisabetta Serrani.
How long's that on in Berlin?
That's going to be up until January, so you can check that out.
Great. So yeah. if you, we have a lot of listeners in Berlin. So if you're in Berlin.
Gallery Udine, opening November 10th.
And will it come here?
No.
Okay, thank you. but listen, we can follow you on socials and see what else you're
yeah,
exhibiting.
Absolutely.
And if there are any art collectors that want to buy, presumably you have a gallery or
yeah,
somebody.
You know, just hit me up. It's fine.
Okay, we'll just hit, do we hit you? There must be.
Don't hit me up. No, just email my gallery.
Email the gallery.
What's I don't
the
want gallery? To talk to you.
what's the gallery?
Gallery Udine in
gallery
Berlin.
Gallery Udine in Berlin. Lydia Pettit, you have been absolutely fascinating. It was really interesting, isn't it?
Hey.
Have you enjoyed it?
Thank you. I appreciate
Big
that.
Big round of applause for Lydia Pettit.
Yay.
Alison Spittle.
Woo.
Everyone here at Soho Theatre.
I'm just, while it's still recording, I'm going to record this just to do a plug. So I got this play going on in Oxford. You can keep walking out, don't worry. This is for the podcast. I got a play that's going on in the old firehouse in Oxford called Glacier. It's on in December. Come check that out. I am touring with a new show called Soup, which is on from January until May. You need to check that out too. And that's about it. Have a great life. Bye.
I've been Deborah Frances White. We've been the Guilty Feminists. Thank you. Good night. You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Frances White, guest co-host Alison Spittle, and a very special guest, Lydia Pettit. The recording engineer was Chris Sharp. Music was by Mark Hodge. The producer was Tom Selinsky for the Spontaneity Shop. Thanks to Rachel Croft and Gina Dicio, Zainab Mohammed, and everyone at Soho Theatre, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit GuiltyFeminist.com. I mean, you're not that small, to be honest. You're about...
No. Nick Nolte. medium size. Why am I bringing up Nick Nolte?
Is Nick Nolte just an average-sized guy? Is he like a 5'9 guy?
I presume so. He gives that energy, doesn't he?
Does he give 5'9 vibes? Yeah. He's neither Tom Cruise nor...
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Is he... What's he?
There was a whole podcast about how tall he was. I can't remember how tall he was, but I remember...
There's too many podcasts now. I feel like... I'm not saying we should stop this one, but I'm tempted just on the basis of hearing that.
Just take one out of the... Yeah?
But I don't think a feminist podcast should back down in the face of a Jake Gyllenhaal's hype podcast. I feel like there's more need for feminism. If I look out the window or I look on the front page of the BBC News, I don't think to myself, we need less feminism. I think we need less of Jake Gyllenhaal's average height. Okay. It's 27 episodes. All right. I'm going to say this. This is The Guilty Feminist.
The Guilty Feminist is provided exclusively from Acast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.